This evening, we're going to talk about abortion in Jewish law. There has been much ink spilled on this topic. It's a contemporary topic, and it goes without saying that it is a very sensitive topic for many people as well. Welcome, Bubby and Zadie. Good to have you with us. So again, my goal in all these topics, some are net naturally more sensitive than others. I'm going to try to, especially in this tonight's topic, when we talk about abortion, to try to keep my own opinions mostly to myself. My goal, as with most classes, especially this one, is to try to present the different schools of thought, what the rabbis and poskim have to say about a particular topic, and then I leave it to my esteemed friends and participants to share their thoughts on the sources that we are learning together. So, abortion in Jewish law. Before I even share the screen, I would like to get your impressions. If I were to ask you on the street, I wake you up in the middle of the night and I ask you, what does Judaism have to say about abortion? What would you say? What would be your impression? Certainly, we must have some initial impressions coming into this. Have we ever thought about it? It's a huge, political here. It's big. Yes, Phyllis.
I would say it's generally allowed, but with certain restrictions or whatever. It's not just willy-nilly, go ahead, get an abortion.
So that's a really interesting approach, Phyllis. I'm not saying it's wrong either. I'm saying it's interesting. So you're suggesting that by default, abortion is permissible, but in certain circumstances, we limit it and say you're not allowed to get an abortion.
Yeah, to save the life of the mother, I know it's absolutely permissible.
Okay, good. Okay. So that'll be one of the first
sources. Can I say something?
Yes, Susan. Susan, you're up.
Let's see. Very, very early on allowed.
Working so long.
Generally prohibited. It's been my understanding that, I mean, it may not always be so clear cut, but mandatory if it's necessary to save the mother's life.
Okay, so both Susan and Phyllis are correct. You know, I guess let's go to the screen share right away since you already brought up our first source. Just give me one moment to make that. And don't look at this. This is the Tzitzel Ezer. That's the big source we're going to deal with at the end. But the first source we're going to look at is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Yatza Rosho, if the head of a child, so we're talking about a woman who's in labor, who's in childbirth, and there are two possible scenarios. Yatza Rosho, a nogimbo, if the child's head already begins to come out of the mother, we do not touch the child. Lefish ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. So the rule is as follows. If a child is still within the mother, and there is an endangerment to the mother's life, then we choose the mother's life over the life of the fetus. However, if the fetus is no longer a fetus, but actually is beginning to be born, its head already came out. I think it's called crowning, might be the official term for it. So when it breaks the precipice, it comes out, then we say, Ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. We cannot choose one life over the other. We cannot choose the mother's life over the child's life. But the question is, this should be like anything else in that parak of Sanhedrin. The child is a rodef. The child is essentially pursuing the mother and is threatening her with death. This is no different than when Reuven takes a knife, pursues Shimon with the intention of murdering him. So shouldn't the child be analogous? The child is chasing after his mother, and he is causing a threat to his mother's life. So what is the difference over here when the child begins to come out of the mother versus when the child's within the mother and we're fine with terminating the fetus in order to save the mother? What's the difference between while the child remains within the mother versus while the child starts coming out of the mother?
Isn't it a real day while it's in...
Let's just finish the source. So the Gemara gives an extremely vague answer. I'll take initial impressions on it before we jump into the Rishonim. Shani Hasam Dimishamaya Karadfila. Here it's different. Once the child starts coming out of the mother, we say Mishamaya Karadfila. She is literally being pursued by heaven. What does that mean? Anyone understand that, what that line is supposed to mean? When the child is inside the mother, he's a rodef. He's threatening her with death. All of a sudden, when the child starts coming out of the mother, now we can't choose one or the other. We just have to leave it up to God to decide. And why? Demishamaya karatbila, because she's being pursued by heaven at that point. Can anyone make sense of this really obscure answer in the Gemara? Because I'll tell you, without any commentary, I can't understand this answer. She's being pursued by heaven. Any thoughts on that?
I lost you there. My internet is unstable, and the sound goes off.
What
from heaven?
We're saying that when the child begins to emerge from its mother, the answer is why do we not choose to terminate the life of that child? Because why don't we treat him like a rodef, like he's running after his mother to murder her, just like when he's inside the womb? Dimishmaya karadfila, because she is being pursued by heaven.
What's she? Who's being pursued? The mother?
Mother. The mother is being pursued by heaven. So this is a very obscure phrase. And because of this, we're actually going to have different understandings in Rishonim. And based on how medieval commentaries understand this Gemara, we're going to come out with different opinions as to whether a fetus is considered a living being in Jewish law. Now, the implication is if a fetus is considered the same as a baby, then the same way if someone, God forbid, stabs and kills a baby, that is called murder in halacha. So too, if someone aborts a fetus, that would also constitute murder. So the question is the fetus considered a living being? So let's take a look at the Rambam. Rambam writes, Avzo mitzvos lo sa'aseh shel lachos al nefesh harodef. You're not supposed to have mercy upon someone who is a rodef, who's pursuing after someone to murder him. Hebrew term of the night that I'm not going to translate. I'm going to translate one more time and just remember this. Rodef, that term means someone who's pursuing someone to murder them. That's the term rodef. I'm going to use that a lot. Lafika horu chachamisha ubra shi maksha lele mutter lachtucha uber meyaha bein besam bein biyad meishu karodef vachareha laharga. So why, when the fetus is inside the mother's womb, are you allowed to abort the fetus? Because when the mother is having difficulties giving birth, you're able to cut up the fetus. You're able to use some sort of, injection, some sort of chemical to kill the fetus, because the child is deemed to be a rodef, is deemed to be pursuing its mother. However, what's the difference once he starts getting born, once he emerges from the mother? Why is that any different? I'm just going to finish this sentence right here. The imish hotzi rosho ein nogibo she'ein doch nefesh mipnei nefesh v'zehu tivo shel olam. And so the Rambam, with a slightly less vague phraseology, says that when a child is being born, once it emerges, this is called tivo shel olam. The expectation at that point, and this is still a little bit vague, is that the child is, this is how childbirth works. Childbirth, by very nature, has certain risks that are involved in it. So Rambam understands what's the difference between a child inside the womb versus coming out of the womb. The child is no longer considered a rodef once he begins to emerge from the womb, because this is considered the natural order of things. The natural order of things is that children have to get born, and once the childbirth process really is kicking in, that the child emerges from the womb, This we leave up to Teva. It's left up to nature to determine who will live at this point. Obviously, if you're able to save both lives, you do. But once the child begins to emerge, we do not choose one over the other. Now, the important point before I take questions that I want to highlight over here is that Rambam does not question whether a fetus is a living being or not. The fetus, whether it is still within the womb, whether it begins to emerge from the womb, has the same status to the Rambam. It's considered a full living being with the only distinction of, do we call him a Rodef before, while he's in the womb, or even after he emerges from the womb? That's the only distinction. The fetus is living. The question is, at what point do we call him a Rodef, a pursuer? So according to the Rambam school of thought, his interpretation of this Gemara is that a fetus would appear to be a living human being even while it remains inside its mother's womb. Any thoughts or questions on that? I think Susan may have had something before.
No, I mean.
Oh, okay.
It seems to me as though there is a big difference whether the child is inside the womb or already outside. While the child is inside the womb, it has no potential to be to breathe, to be a living person. You can't teach it. You can't, it can't walk or it can't talk. Once it comes out, it already has the potential to, it's alive. It's another human being. You have two people, not one person.
Very good. So Phyllis, you're mechaving to Rashi. Rashi's going to argue on the Rambam, and we'll get to him in just a moment. All right. So thank you for bringing that up. That is the second school of thought on this Gemara. Any other comments before we move on? Okay. So just,
it depends what constitutes, life.
That's our question here.
Breath.
That lies at the center of this sugya. This is basically the thought process. Is the fetus a living being? Is it considered a human being like a baby? If yes, then aborting a fetus would prop what might be considered murder. If no, then it is not murder. It might be something else. That's the most, if I had to bifurcate the two opinions in this sugya, in this topic, that would be how it goes. So just to bring it home, this isn't just the Rambam. Rav Moshe Feinstein spells this out explicitly. So Lahavdil Alfei Havdalos, the evangelical Christians in the United States, so they hold, or I don't know, just the evangelicals, I think pretty much most Christians, my understanding is that they say that abortion equals murder, equals death of a baby. That's usually how they phrase it. So it's not only Christians that believe that, but there is a school of thought in Jewish law that believes that as well. This is most notably formulated by Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, Kesafti kol zeh le'inyan hafratza hagedola, hapirtza hagedola ba'olam. I've seen that there's a huge breach of morality in this world. Shahamalchias of our government, the Hare Medinos, Hetiru l'harog ubarim, that there are many countries that permit you to murder, l'harog, to murder fetuses. Ubesochem gam roshi amedina b'medinas Yisrael, and to our chagrin, even in the state of Israel, this is happening. Ukvar nehergu ubarim le'ein misbar. Shemizman is that there's so many children that we can't even keep a count of it at this point. We have no way to quantify how many fetuses, how many children's lives have been lost. Ha'od yish tzorich lasus, Shemizman is that ha'od yish tzorich lasus yog la'torah. Because especially nowadays, especially it's Rav Moshe Feinstein talking in the 20th century, there is a huge need to create a fence around the Torah to stick to our principles. Ukol shekein shlo lasos kulos be'isra chitza chamer be'yoser. And we shouldn't be trying to find leniencies and leeway when it comes to this prohibition, when it comes to the prohibition of murder, God forbid. And then in the parentheses, he points out, and we're going to, this is a, consider this a preview for a little later in the class. Shalchein nishomam ti b'ra'asai b'tshuva mechacham echa b'Yisrael. So I saw that there was, I saw this tshuva, this response written by a prominent rabbinic authority in Israel who is affiliated with Shaarei Tzedek. We'll find out who that is a little later in the class. And he's who Mahmatar Havladush Ide Bechinos Arovim Shubar, Yosem Migil Chadash Shubar, who Mamachlas Tesaks Lahapilo. He says that if he tests, if they test the child, they find out that after 3 months, plus 3 months, that the child is going to have Tesaks. He rules that you're able to abort the child. Rav Moshe Feinstein couldn't disagree more strongly with that. This is bona fide murder, according to Moshe Feinstein. The same way it is prohibited to, you see someone who's 40 years old taking a stroll down the street and you take a knife to that person and murder them, God forbid, he sees it as tantamount. It's the same thing when someone aborts a fetus. Whether we're talking about a regular, you know, someone who had regular birth, someone who is a mamzer, someone who was born with no health issues, someone who was born, God forbid, with Tay-Sachs, shakulan asurim medina mamish. This is not a joke. It's absolutely prohibited according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And you can't go ahead. Do not rely on this response that came out. It is murder 100% according to Moshe Feinstein. And this school of thought of Moshe Feinstein, the way to put it most simply is that it's built upon the Rambam that we saw, who understands that a fetus is no different than a baby who's in the middle of being born, who's emerging from the mother. There's a separate question of Rodef if he presents a danger to his mother, but absent causing some form of danger to his mother, there would be no reason that someone could abort a fetus even while it is still completely within the womb, according to the Rambam Rav Moshe Feinstein school of thought. And so this is the first school of thought. Wow. Do we have any impressions, any questions on this?
I see Anne
raising her hand. Yes, Anne.
She's muted.
Oh, Anne, you got to
I got to unmute.
There we go. I unmuted you. You're good.
Thanks. Thank you. No, what he's saying is no way can you abort for any reason.
Except when it presents danger to the mother.
Right.
Right. So that is correct.
Yeah. It's a in my mind, it's a very insensitive position.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand some of it, but I certainly cannot understand if you know a child will be born with Tay-Sachs and you know the child has no chance to live. And whatever life it has is going to be in pain and suffering. I find that very, very difficult to accept that.
And I would agree with you that I think definitely anyone who adopts Ramosha's position, you have to be 100% confident that that is correct. See, here's the issue. Let me just try to frame the discussion here. No matter what you choose, you are making a difficult decision because on one end, like you just said, Phyllis, if you do not allow abortion, what if a child, God forbid, is going to have Tay-Sachs and they're going to die only after a few years of being in this world and they're going to be suffering that whole time? So the emotional trauma to the parents as well as the pain caused to their child. So on the one hand, there's that balancing, that sensitivity. But then if someone really is compelled, they really believe that this constitutes murder to permit an abortion in that case, they also are making a very weighty decision because that means they are permitting something that may very well constitute murder. Just to put it again into perspective, you know how we talked about in our first class that we had, I guess about 2 months ago by now, where we talked about pikuach nefesh. We talked about how even a suffik pikuach nefesh, even if there's a doubt if I'm put in danger, we say we err on the caution of saving people's lives. So too over here, that has to be part of the equation. So for Moshe Feinstein, it's not necessarily, you know, I'll give a somewhat charitable read. It's not necessarily that he's not sensitive. In fact, actually, if you look at other responses from Moshe Feinstein, where he deals with the children who are put in like mental institutions, he's very, you see how he writes there, he's very sympathetic. But if he actually, he read through the sources and he's compelled to believe that this is murder, you can't just say, okay, you can murder someone if they're suffering. I mean, that's the euthanasia discussion. But even for youth, right, you can't euthanize someone. Moshe Feinstein, this is going to be another topic we deal with when it comes to euthanasia. So he says that if the machine stops working and the person's suffering, so you don't necessarily have to turn on the respirator again, okay. But to actively euthanize, to actively murder someone because they are suffering, that is a very controversial stance to take because you're saying that you could murder someone. So the lenient opinions that we're going to find, they come from a place of sensitivity as well, but they're also going to come from a place of understanding halachically. They're going to question whether abortion equals murder. Okay? All right. I don't know if you're convinced by that, but my best to frame the discussion.
Yeah, okay. you have to just accept, be willing to accept it, that's what they say.
We're not necessarily going to agree with everything.
I think the hardest part is when you actually have to make the decision.
Right. So I'll tell you something. A lot of it was hard for me to find a lot of contemporary literature on this because a lot of the post-skim, a lot of the rabbinic authorities in our community, because of the damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of mentality here, is either you're approving of something that some people consider murder or you're telling people that they have to bring a child to this world who's going to suffer, many post-skim will not go down on record with their decisions. Many times the way this works is that people reach out to a rabbi who consults with a posek, and then it's really dealt with in privacy and confidentiality. But I mean, very few people, except for people like Moshe Feinstein, who have those broad shoulders, they don't want to take a stance on it publicly because it's that difficult of a topic to take a stance on. Sorry, Anna, I apologize. I cut you off, or were you saying something else? Okay.
It's maybe not even taking a stance. I mean, it's a personal opinion that's between the posek, the rabbi, and between the people, the woman and husband who's bearing the child. It's not, it doesn't have to be one answer for everybody.
Maybe right. So I think you're absolutely right. And I think there's a lot of, it's very unclear sometimes how this is handled. And, you know, you have to basically be a fly on the wall in every different rabbi study to figure out how they handle these kind of situations. But again, so the goal of this year is not to exactly go, I'm just telling you that just to understand the facts on the ground, but this is just to understand what goes into that thought process. So the next school of thought I want to bring up is what Phyllis mentioned before, which is, this doesn't necessarily fit so well with the words of the Gemara, but this is actually what I would say is the more intuitive distinction between a fetus who is in the womb versus a child / fetus who begins to emerge from its mother. Rashi says, what's the difference? So, Be'isha Mekasha Lele Musu Kenes, Ukutani Resha Achai Boshetis Yada Vechotcho Metzios Leivar. So when can the midwife do an abortion on the child? Dechol Zman Shlo Yatzla Aver HaOlam. Here's the key words. Lav Nefeshu. This is not considered a living soul as long as it remains within the womb.
Oh.
Therefore, v'nitin lohorgu lahatzil's ima, Rashi says, that's the reason you're allowed to kill the child while it's still within the mother's womb and to save the mother. Avol yatza rosho, once his fetus begins to emerge, it's no longer just a fetus, it becomes a child. Ain no gimbo lahargo. Why don't we kill it? Why don't we? Because it's killing. The havale ki yalud, because it's considered born at that point. And therefore, the same way, somehow a child was completely born from the mother, you can't murder that child. That'd be murdering it for sure. So once the child begins to come out, emerge from the mother, it's already considered a living being, a living soul. And I can see a few head nods over here for people who like that distinction. So it doesn't fit well with the words in the Gemara, by the way, because this, let's just go back for a moment, right? Intuitively, this makes a lot of sense. This is how, if you asked me, I would say this, and a number of you did, that when a child is inside the womb of the mother, it's still a fetus. It's not a living soul. It doesn't have a soul yet. Lav nefeshu. But once the child is born, emerges from the mother, then it's considered a living being. It has a soul, and therefore killing it, would abortion at that point would not just be abortion. It would constitute murder. That is a
Rabbi?
Very, yes. No.
Dina.
Yes.
Is there any distinction between what happens during the first trimester versus the second or third trimester? Is there any discussion of that at all?
Yes, we will, God willing, get to that soon.
Okay.
But you are correct. There may be a distinction based on what trimester the child is in. So, but the thing is, according to this Rashi, actually, it doesn't seem to make a difference which trimester it's in. Rashi understands it could be the ninth month, the final day, the day of the birth, but if the child has not left the mother's body and doesn't begin to emerge, then it's still not considered to be a living being. Now, I just want to go back one second to the Gemara we saw at the beginning. Rashi's great and all, but what the difficulty with Rambam is that his distinction is not intuitive. The difficulty with Rashi is that he's intuitive, but he doesn't fit well with the Gemara. Because what was the Gemara's distinction between a child in the fetus inside the womb versus a child who already emerges from the mother? There's no inherent difference. Just one is considered a rodef while it's within the womb. One is not considered a rodef once it begins to emerge. So that's not the distinction Rashi's talking about. So this is just to understand that we're not going to have a good interpretation here. Either one is difficult to understand, which is the Rambam, or Rashi's understandable, but he doesn't support himself well with the actual words of the Gemara. But be it as it may, there are still many poskim, many authorities that go down the route of Rashi. One such is the, if you look in the Shals at Shuvas Mishpate Uziel, he writes, Al kolpanim adavar barish lo tiyu lagu barim elak shiyesh tzorech medavar, ba'afil mutzar, kolosh, even if you don't have such a good reason to abort the fetus, but you're allowed to abort it. Kagon diminuvola ha'aim, al shalol tzorech vadai sha'asr mishum ha'ashchasa, when he's a shir sachayim l'nefesh mishal. So here's the question. According to Rashi, if you're allowed to kill the fetus in order to save the mother, so let me ask you a question. Why do I need the impetus? Why do I need the reason of saving the mother as a factor here? If the child or if the fetus is not considered to be a living human being while it remains within the womb of its mother, why do I need to wait until there's extreme circumstances that the mother's life is in danger? Shouldn't we be able to abort it for any reason? What would be wrong with aborting a fetus at all if it's not considered a murder? Any thoughts on what could possibly be wrong? Other, you know, is it either it's murder or it's completely mutter? It's completely permissible. Is there a middle ground of some sort?
I was thinking that at some point in time, it does have the potential to live, even though it's not out of the mother's womb. In other words, if there's something wrong with the mother and the pediatrician or obstetrician, excuse me, says we have to get this kid out, and they do a C-section at 6 months old or 7 months old, the child can live, even though it hasn't been born. It still has the potential to live.
Okay. You know, and that's definitely, Dina brought up the trimesters. We'll get to that in a moment, how trimesters might make a difference based on what you're saying and based on what Dina said before. So let me just give you a reason. There are other reasons why abortion would be prohibited. It doesn't have to be murder. One reason is, not that you're murdering a child, but you're preventing the potential for life. That's not called murder. Murder is taking away a life that's already there. We may say that the fetus is not a living being, lav nefeshu, like Rashi said, it doesn't have a soul yet, but to prevent the potential of life is also prohibited. Now, what exactly is that prohibition? You may say it's being mavato, I say, peri viribia. You're actively going against and nullifying the potential to fulfill a positive commandment of be fruitful and multiply. There is some discussion about that. But along that line, once we say that abortion is not murder, it might be prohibited for some secondary reasons, that gives us a lot of leeway to say, well, maybe we don't need to wait just for the case where a mother's life is in danger, but there may be other reasons, other extenuating circumstances where we can abort a fetus. So one example, we'll just say this one quickly because we'll get to the Tzitz Eliezer, which is the crescendo. The Shelis Yaivitz, or Yaakov Emden, says that there may also be a basis to abort a fetus of a mamzer, meaning if a woman had an affair, she committed adultery, and she's going to bear a child from it, he considers that perhaps you would be able to abort that mamzer. One reason is, I feel enemy should be kuach nefeshimo, even if it's not endangering the mother, to prevent this humiliation and this pain that's going to be caused to the mother, to the child. And he says at the end, since really an adulterous woman, even though we don't have the power of a beis din, we don't have a Sanhedrin today, we can't put her to death today for having an adulterous affair, still, she's really in principle liable to the death penalty. Therefore, her child, the child is considered a part of the mother. So the same way the mother really should be put to death, this child, in a certain way, by virtue of his mother, also has a death warrant hanging over him. And for those who are with us in the Sunday morning Chumash class, this is actually what we talked about. We talked about how a woman who committed adultery, we do not wait for her to give birth to the fetus. Rather, we put her to death and her child dies along with her. So this is that idea. For those who were with us in the Sunday morning Chumash class, this is that idea playing again. I love it when we see the parallels between the classes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Basically,
if the child is born, he doesn't get put to death.
Right, if he's born. So right, a fetus, which is about abortion only.
Bizarre result.
Right. So that's why when the fetus, this is an important principle, because when the fetus is part of the mother, it's considered a part of her body. So it's a similar idea in Shechita. So if you slaughter, Ben Pakua, so if you slaughter a cow and it has a child in it, so the child is considered to be kosher already as well. But Midrabanan rabbinically be prohibited. Why? It's the same way in Hilchos Shechita, when it comes to ritual slaughter, we say that the fetus of that cow has the same status as its mother. So too, over here, when it comes to human beings as well, we understand that for certain laws, the fetus shares the same legal status as its mother because it's not an independent being until it is born. That's an important principle that we gather from here.
Rabbi?
Yes, Anne.
That kind of gives you permission in a way, in a rape case, that they can take the child.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you, Anne. So not just adultery, but this would be the basis also for a woman who is raped, God forbid, that why should, you know, she should have to live with the child. And so naturally, I mean, obviously I can't imagine this, but from what I've read, people will say that they, you know, when they see the child, it reminds them of being raped. And so they want to abort the child because of that. So, yes, that would be another extenuating circumstance, very much analogous, I believe, to what we just saw in Rav Yaakov Emden, where he talked about a mamzer.
Right.
Okay. Now,
anybody ever think about adoption?
About
murdering these poor innocent children? I mean, if you can't, if you think you'll be so mentally disturbed because of, you know, what it reminds you of.
Yes, but just the process of bearing it.
Well, as opposed to killing it, I don't know.
Well, that's the, I think that's very much a discussion here, which is, is that called killing it?
That child has the potential to be as great as anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's, you are all correct. These are the factors that are being weighed by the poskim, and these are the factors that are being weighed when people have to actually face this in real life as well. Okay. There's one more source I want to look at. Just what time are we scheduled to end tonight?
Yes.
Okay. I want to, it'd be a shame. I'd be remiss if we didn't actually get through this next source. So here's the deal. I think we officially, it's a 45-minute class. We finish at 9:30. If you need a, if people need to log off, you can log off. I'm not offended. But I will keep going till we finish this source, which might take us a little longer. So the source I want to bring to your attention, if we learn this topic and we don't see this source, we can pack up our bags and say we failed. We did not actually learn the topic of abortion in Jewish law. We just saw our Moshe Feinstein, who was the hardline position that said, this is abortion equals murder unequivocally. That since, now remember, he referred to a certain rabbi who's affiliated with Shaarei Tzedek Hospital in Israel, who said that that you could do an abortion for a Tay-Sachs child. Well, that rabbi happens to be none other than the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, who was a premier posek with a specialty in Jewish medical ethics. So he could go toe-to-toe with Rav Moshe Feinstein. They're of the same caliber.
When did he live?
20th century as well. They were contemporaries.
Okay.
I think when we did the topic on Pikuach Nefesh, we talked about smoking. So there, Rav Moshe was the more lenient one, and the Tzitz Eliezer was the one criticizing Rav Moshe Feinstein a year later. So now, this is the opposite. So apparently they've had their disagreements. You can look through the responsa, and you'll see that sometimes.
Please remind me, what's his full name? It's Tzitz Eliezer?
Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg.
Oh, Waldenberg. Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. So he says first, I'm going to skip a little bit just to cut out, but Ki sheben mikra meyuchad hazeh asher totzas ko chumras beknafav im hamshachas haryon va'aleida, where there's all these difficulties that come with birth. He's talking about Tay-Sachs now. I don't know intimately, thank God, the details of Tay-Sachs, but my understanding is that the child lives for no more than 3 to 5 years, from what I believe, and even those years are full of suffering and harsh difficulties for both the child and the parents. So he's dealing with a very extreme case over here. So he says, in the case of Tay-Sachs, Efshir lahatir asakas harayon ad shiva chadoshim, he permits it for the first 2 trimesters, through 7, well, actually more than that, through 7 months. But yeah, I guess it's beyond 2 trimesters. The first 7 months of development of that baby, of the fetus, you are able to do an abortion if you find out that that child is going to have Tay-Sachs. And this is, of course, even if it's not going to cause, even if the mother's life is not in danger from the birth itself. But from 7 months and onwards, Adavar Kfar Yoser Chamor. Notice what he says. He doesn't say it's usser, actually. He doesn't say that from 7 months and onward it's prohibited, but he says that it's more strict, which means that this is just my interpretation. It sounds like he doesn't want to go down on record permitting beyond, from 7 months and beyond in the last trimester, but it sounds like he's leaving room for people to consult and possibly give a dispensation there. That's my read on it. Because the child already at that point in the third trimester is basically done with development and could be viable at that point. So this speaks to Dina's point before about the breakdown of the trimesters. There are other breakdowns. There are some who say that they distinguish, they cut off by the first month. If I'm remembering correctly, it might be the Sridi-ish, but I need to check that again. But the Tzitzel-Yezer has a very novel cutoff, a very lenient cutoff, which is from the third trimester. Up until the third trimester, abortion is permitted in extenuating circumstances. Now, why is it permitted in these extenuating circumstances? Bar Pasha Davar Balach of the Israel Ainu Naharig Al Barin, Mava Das Yechid Isser and Poskim Shisir Mehe Yeshno, Aval Das Habri and Poskim, She Isser Ainu Ella Midirabanan. That means until the rabbis came along, there was no biblical prohibition of abortion. Oh, Ragmish together Binyan Sha'olam, or it's because we're supposed to build the world. There might be different reasons we talked about, or you're preventing life. Point being, according to Tzitzel Yezer, not only is it not murder, it's not even any, there's no biblical prohibition to do an abortion. And he quotes the Tshuva of the Maharit, who talks about Shadar Nachos Mishmufuas Ima, Afil Be'ein Tziva Shal Bikoch Nef She'ein. He permitted an abortion even when the mother was not in danger. And then if you look in the next paragraph, he quotes the Tshuva we saw before from Rav Yaakov Emdin, the Shelas Yaivitz, where he says, just to save the mother from the pain of having a child that was born from this adulterous union or from rape, that is enough to warrant breaking the rabbinical prohibition on abortion in order to perform an abortion to save the mother from that pain. And after he sets this all up, this is the main paragraph. The im came, and Phyllis, I think this really speaks to the point that you were making before. Agaba atzmecha, im yish tzorech dar ka'ev yoser gadol mizeh shel nidonenim. Is there a case of greater pain, greater difficulty than the case we have in front of us right now? You see, on Shabbos we have a principle that someone who is a chula she'ein bo sakana. You're sick, you're bedridden, you're in a lot of pain, but you're not going to die. So then there, you're actually allowed to break a – it gets a little technical, but essentially you could break a rabbinical prohibition in order to help someone who is in extreme pain. That is a halacha in general in Hilchos Shabbos. So when you think about it, essentially what it sits – or, you know, I'll give you another example just to put it in the same light. If someone is in the restroom and they don't have pre-ripped toilet paper or tissues – and they have no other options but the roll of toilet paper, they're allowed to do mekalkel. You rip the toilet paper not on the perforations, but you do it in a way that just destroys the toilet paper. That's only a rabbinical level prohibition. In order to save yourself from that embarrassment of not having the means to clean yourself. So that is a similar principle. We, for kavod abrios, we're able to supersede a rabbinical prohibition. The child... aborting a child, according to Tzitzel Yezer, essentially is no different than tearing toilet paper not on the seams on Shabbos. It's a rabbinical level prohibition. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to be insensitive when I say that. I'm just trying to say from a legal standpoint, they are categorically the same, which means that for reasons of kavod abrios, human dignity, or tsar gadol, someone who is in great pain, we can supersede a rabbinical level prohibition. So what the Tzitzel Yezer is saying is, if we in general can supersede a rabbinical level prohibition for someone who is in great pain, is there a tsar okay yoser gadol mizeh shel nidonenu? Is there a case of greater pain than our case over here? Asher garem la'ein ba'avlad lo yotzor kezeh shekulam yisum rachov v'misasot v'tov meshem mispar shanim ve'enei ha'hor mos achos ba'ein la'el yadam lo shia, that both the parents and the child are suffering, and his child only gets to live for a few years in this world, and the parents, they look for salvation, but they find none. Certainly, there's no case of greater pain than this. Ubar shalom mishanev lo malchus klum b'mavada zay yilkach l'motzam yuchad. It doesn't matter if this child, in theory, they could send them to an institution that will take care of them. Lo yidnu gish lahorim adamoso, and that the parents would never see them for the rest of their life if they, for some reason, they chose that route. That doesn't make a difference. Tzitzel Yezer says it'd be permitted to seek an abortion in that case. I'm just going to finish this next paragraph and I'll take any comments or questions. So he says, in addition to this, think about the Yisur Machovim Shoa Yila Ba'atzmo. The child itself is going to go through so much pain in the few years that it has in this world. Therefore, and the Yisur, and just skip a little bit, the Yisur Mucha'evim Nefashayim Hema B'midim Ruba Harba Yosur G'don V'Yosur Mechivim Yisur Gufayim. The emotional pain, the trauma, that the psychological distress that the parties involved have to deal with, both the parents and the child, is greater than the physical pain that is endured. So it is on this understanding, on this basis, that since the other says, A, aborting a child does not constitute murder, it's only rabbinical. Therefore, B, this second factor, this is a case of extreme pain, a truly extenuating circumstance. Even if the mother's life is not in danger, the child and the mother would experience such extreme pain that at least through the first two trimesters, it would warrant an abortion halakhically, according to the Tzitz Eliezer. And because of this controversial stance, we saw earlier that Ramosha Feinstein did not quote him by name. Of course, Ramosha Feinstein was classy, had the decency not to do that. But he said there's a rabbi in Shari Tzedek who thinks that you're allowed to do an abortion for Tay-Sachs. However, it's usur b'din rechitza mamish. It's actual murder. These are two main schools of thought that we have. There are nuances in between, but some think abortion is murder, that a fetus is a full living being. Some do not. It's only rabbinical prohibition, and that's what leads to a lot of controversy in Jewish law. So if there's one thing you take away from this, just think about how when it comes to political debates in America, we hear a lot of rhetoric, are we pro-life, are we pro-choice? So the answer is, just putting the rhetoric aside, within Judaism, we have a debate. Some see it as abortion as murder. Some see it as a rabbinical level of prohibition that if you have a good enough of a reason, it warrants an abortion. So you can't say Judaism says X, because within Judaism, there is a huge difference of opinion on how we approach this topic. So yes, are we pro-life? Yes, we are pro-life, but but the question is a fetus considered a living being? And then are we pro-choice? We believe that the choices we make are based on what halacha, what God wants from us. Those are the choices that we make. So based on whether halacha tells us an abortion is mutter or not, those are the choices that Judaism wants us to make. So this is the general thing of abortion. Again, there's much ink spilled on this topic beyond what we looked at, like in general with all these shiurim. But I'll stay on for a few minutes to take any thoughts or questions of what we just learned together.
Thank you. This was really great.
Are there any other any other diseases that they considered other than Tay-Sachs?
Okay, good. So this is why we need more literature on the topic that people are willing to write on. There may be some that I'm just not familiar with, but right, the question is, Tay-Sachs is a very extreme disease. What if you just know that your child is going to have a minor defect or is going to have some form of
mental retardation, let's say, or severely retarded or whatever.
Right, so whatever the terminology one wants to use for it. So there could be level gradations that aren't as extreme as Tay-Sachs, where the child will live until, 40s, 50s, live a happy life. So the question is, does it sit Eliezer Pesach extend to it? Can parents choose to say that in a case where a child has another genetic defect that they don't want to bring that child into the world? Or is it only for something as extreme as Tay-Sachs, which doesn't only cause pain to the parents, but causes pain to the child as well? So that's really where there's a little bit of ambiguity as to how far it sits Eliezer would stretch his position.
At what point do they start discussing this? In other words, I don't know what year they found out about Tay-Sachs, or they found out about these DNA.
I'd have to check the years of the tshuva, but I think these are written in 20th century, so I think that's when there was more of an awareness of it. If I'm not mistaken, I think like early 20th century, there wasn't much of an wide of an awareness. Now there's an organization called Dor Yesharim, which is it's a Haredi organization organized that they test for genetic defects, primarily Tay-Sachs. The founder, they had a child with Tay-Sachs, so he founded the organization. There's also J-Screen, which is I recommend using because it actually tells you your results. For Doreen Sharon, you just have a number, and then your potential mate has a number. You send it in, they tell you if you're compatible or not. So you don't get to make an educated decision.
When was this? What year did they start thinking about these diseases? Or did they know enough to talk about it?
I'm here in this world for a little less years than some other people here. So maybe.
I mean, already.
It goes back a long way.
When my kids were getting married, let's say 15, 16 years ago, already they had that.
Oh, no. I remember when around.
How long ago? Like in the early 1900s, did they know about any of this stuff?
Oh.
No.
Well, when did the Taliezer live?
20th
he died in 2006. I looked it up.
But when did he write what you were reading?
I have to check the date, but this is probably written in 20th century.
Moshe
Feinstein died in the
1986, I think.
1986. So Moshe Feinstein
already was born in 1900. They didn't know about this.
But I know even like I remember people around my age having tests to see amniocentesis for Down syndrome. And maybe into some of these rabbis thinking, maybe Rabbi Moshe's thinking was maybe they come up even after the child is born with some sort of cure. But I also, know someone who has a child with an extreme difficulty, and sometimes you don't know about these genetic difficulties in advance.
Right.
So,
years ago, you didn't know about any of it.
No, I know, but there are others, the couple may not be aware of and so forth.
Yeah, now they have lots of.
There's a lot more screening between couples now.
But if you go back, Rashi discussed it, Rambam discussed it, so something must have been important back then.
Well, for the Rambam.
There would have been no way to know, though.
There wasn't a disease, though.
He didn't know the disease, but they were concerned about the situation.
Right, in terms of endangering the mother.
Well, right.
So exactly what we're doing is we're trying to take the principles and apply it to the cases we see today. That was what Anne brought up before when we talked about in the Sheilas Yavetz. So if the woman had an affair or was raped, that would be a basis. But that means you have to believe. You can't accept Moshe Feinstein that abortion is murder. You only have that leeway if you don't believe that abortion constitutes bona fide murder. All right.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you all for joining.
A lot to think about.
All right, thank you all for joining. And God willing, we should be back on track for Monday evenings this coming week.
Again, 8:45?
I think we'll keep it 8:45, but just check the Shabbos bulletin in case anything changes. Or you could ask me next time we see each other on the class, but I'll make sure to get that out.
What I thought years ago, the decision was for 45 minutes. That was, I don't remember if it was Whitest. I think that was Whitest's decision. I think Walk did it for an hour. I'm not sure if I remember correctly.
But it's not the amount of time, it's the hour. Huh? 8 o'clock would be a better time.
Yeah, right now we can't.
But I was not talking about that. I was talking about the length of the lecture. So that I just wanted to give you a little historic information.
Thank you.
It's up to meetings. Some meetings go a little longer, some go
longer. Yeah, I think it depends on the subject.
Yeah. And thank you to Toby, Ann, and also all who are on the board meeting who jumped on immediately afterwards for dedication. I know it's a really long time to be on Zoom, so
I'm impressed.
And all our regulars as well. And Bobby and Zadie, good to see you as well. Thanks for joining.
Good night, everyone.
Toby, I couldn't get on the board. I did by telephone.
Okay.
What was the problem? I don't. Oh, you know what it was, because it wasn't Zoom. I don't know why he.